Good afternoon.
Hello.
Thank you so much for taking the time to do this wee interview with me.
It's my absolute pleasure. I'm privileged and thankful to be asked.
As a new permanent resident in Scotland, in the UK, one of the things I absolutely enjoy that was completely foreign to me is pantomime, the panto shows during Christmas time. I would love to ask you a few questions about that. But before we get into that, could you just give us a small introduction of your name and who you are?
Yep. My name is Barry Hunter. I'm an actor. I've been an actor for 25 years plus, actually, and a resident in Scotland, now just outside Dundee, but originally from Glasgow. And I've been the pantomime dame at Perth Theatre since 2011 was my first show. So I've done nine of them.
Nine.
I've done nine, yeah.
You've done nine shows in panto for Perth, that is.
That's right.
Specifically. How many years were you doing panto before then?
For the more or less every year for the preceding, let me do the maths, what's that, 16 years? I graduated from the Royal Scottish Academy of Music and Drama, as it was then known, now the Conservatoire, in 1995. And pretty much from there on in, I did, if not actual pantos, Christmas shows or shows at Christmas. So I did at the Citizens Theatre in Glasgow was my first one, which was Pinocchio. Then I did Wizard of Oz there. But they were Christmas shows, but they were quite pantomimic, actually, in a lot of respects. We also did Merlin the Magnificent there, which was more Christmas show than panto. But actual pantos, I did 5 years at the Glasgow Kings, which from the early 2000s, kind of playing sundry roles, emperors of China and fairy king and all sorts of the first minister. So I did Babes in the Wood there and Aladdin twice. And what else did I do? Sleeping Beauty and Mother Goose, where I was the baddie. So I didn't do Dame in those days. That was my first Dame was when I came to Perth in 2011.
Oh, well, I have more questions on that. But first, can we go back a little bit in time?
Sure.
I'm very curious to know, what are your first memories of panto, even from your childhood?
Yeah, well, my first memories of panto, I would think, would be Glasgow Kings with the legendary Stanley Baxter as the Dame. And it's funny because, I mean, I remember the overall experience of it, but I don't remember specifics about the show at all. The only thing I remember was at some point, probably in the song sheet, I can't even think, it probably would have been the song sheet, young people being asked to come up on stage to do a thing and sitting down in the front stalls with my old neighbour, Charles Gillespie, and his father, and desperately wanting to be up there. And not being up there and feeling kind of slightly put out and left out. So that's my kind of earliest memory of
How
panto.
Old were you?
I must have been about, I think, eight or nine, probably. And I don't remember having seen a pantomime before that. We weren't taken to pantomimes at school, for example. Mm. I don't think, it certainly didn't happen at my school. I don't know if that happened generally at school in the early 70s. So that's my kind of first memory of it. And I was quite aware of that building, though, because my gran and my grandpa on my mum's side were both involved in amateur dramatics, and the shows that they were involved in got put on in the Glasgow Kings, usually in November of the year. So that's another kind of memory of that time, because we would go and see the show, by which time the Christmas lights had been put up in George Square, so the family thing would be, we would go and see the show, and we would probably be taken backstage afterwards. And then we would all jump in the car and we would drive through Glasgow and drive round George Square with all the Christmas lights on. Aww. So that's a kind of weird Christmas sort of memory, although it was November, but it's kind of associated and it kind of feels like a panto memory, although it's actually not.
Oh, I understand. So you've been doing panto for quite some time.
Yeah.
You started doing panto in Perth with Horse Cross in the theatre since 2011, you said.
That's right, yeah.
What was that like? What brought you to Perth?
Andrew Panton, the now artistic director of Dundee Rep, had been asked to direct the pantomime that year, which was going to be Jack and the Beanstalk. Rachel O'Riordan was the fairly recent, at that point, artistic director, and for whatever reason, she was not going to be directing the panto in her first year here as the artistic director, and had approached Andrew. As far as I know, she had approached Andrew, and the kind of remit was they were looking to find a new dame for Scotland, essentially, so, like someone who had never been a dame before, but this would be, I guess, a sort of launch pad or whatever for that. And the reason that Andrew had thought of me was in 2005, I did a production of Gypsy at the Dundee Rep that James Browning had directed, and I played Ms. Mazeppa, who was this trumpet-playing, gladiator-beclad stripper, who was most definitely a man, but no one... Well, the thing is, in the script, it's not mentioned because it's not played traditionally as a cross-dress thing. It is, there's these three strippers, and they are all women. But James just had this idea that Ms. Mazeppa would be this kind of rough and ready sort of stripper that everyone knows is a man, but no one dares mention and no one dares even sort of point it out. So, and she's, you know, she's kind of like, you know, something wrong with stripping, you know. And so Andrew had seen that and had asked me afterwards, had I ever done pantomime? And I said no, and would it be something that interested you? And I was like, well, no, I've never really. And at that point in 2005, it wasn't something that particularly excited me as a prospect at all. And then that was, you know, that conversation happened and was kind of forgotten about. And then in 2011, I got this text or a phone call, I can't remember, from Andrew saying, we need to meet up for a coffee. And we did. And he said, remember that conversation we had? Well, what do you think in 2011 now? Is it something you might be interested in? And I kind of thought not that long and said, yeah, I think it is. And that was kind of basically how it started. So Jack and the Beanstalk was the first one here. Mm-hmm. And it just sort of rolled on from there. They asked me back and have continued to do so. So we did three here in the building, in the theatre. We did Jack the Beanstalk, the Mother Goose, which was my second year, which was a real... I mean, the first year I lost over a stone in weight, which I think I needed to lose anyway. And then the second year was Mother Goose, which was relentless because, you know, the dame is the centre point of the story. Mm-hmm. And it's an incredibly tricky one to do because you basically have to have the audience fall out of love with you when she becomes this sort of vainglorious monster, really, in search of eternal youth and wealth. And then seeing the error of her ways has to kind of come back and get the audience to fall back in love with her. So it's a kind of marathon show in a lot of respects. So once I kind of got that one under my belt, I thought, no, I think I can definitely do this. And then Cinderella was the third, and then after that the building closed for its rebuild, and we moved across the road to the concert hall, and we did 3 years there, which were Sleeping Beauty, Beauty and the Beast, and Dick McWhittington. Mm-hmm. And then we came back into the building, reopened
happily.
Thankfully, yes, into this beautiful place, and did Aladdin, which was 2 years ago, Snow White and the Seven Dames, which was last year, which was the first one I directed. And then this year, what was it again? What did we do this
Sinbad.
Year? Sinbad. So yes, it's been an exhausting week. Sinbad, which I directed again and also wrote in its entirety for the first time. So that's the kind of, I was going to say potted history. It's quite a long history.
But a good history.
Well, yeah, so far, so good.
Well, understanding that pantomime, panto for short, is a... It's a phenomenon of for entertainment for families and has been so in Britain since the 18th century.
Yeah.
However, there are particular differences that you'll find in different regions. I've heard from other audience members that Scottish panto is nothing like English panto, and I would imagine Welsh panto would be quite different. Maybe even how they do it in Northern Ireland would also have its own particulars. What can you tell me especially knowing other colleagues that do panto in other parts of the UK. What makes a Scottish panto Scottish?
I think, and I'm saying this slightly from the position that I've never actually seen panto south of the border from Scotland, but, you know, again, just by reportage and from what I glean and what I pick up. In Scotland, generally, even the big commercial pantos like the Glasgow and the Edinburgh Kings and His Majesty's Aberdeen, predominantly, they're slightly different, but for the most part, they use bona fide actors to... to be the cast of the show. When you look at certainly the commercial pantomimes down south and elsewhere, you have a lot of reality TV stars, you have a lot of people who are known for a certain thing who are brought in, and it becomes a vehicle for them, and it is, you know, by the very nature of being a commercial concern, it's a moneymaker. I mean, I don't mean that disparagingly at all. But I think, you know, there's more elements of they'll get speciality acts, and you'll have a moment where, you know, the duck juggler will come on and juggle 17 ducks. No idea why I came up with that, but that kind of idea. You'll have a wonderful singer, but they're not an actor, but they won a talent show the year before on national television. So you've got all that kind of going on in that play. Whereas in Scotland, you know, I think for the most part, we use actors, people who work throughout the year, you know, in other, you know, doing Shakespeare and Ibsen and, you know, Gregory Burke plays or whoever, and then they come together at the end of the year and bring their acting talents and, you know, and stick it on a stage and tell a story. I think certainly what I've always been impressed with here, and I don't mean this because I wrote it this year, but prior to that, when it was Alan McHugh's scripts or whatever, the story is absolutely the heart of it. The narrative is crucial. It's not just a case of, and at this point we have a great big glitzy number. We will have a great big glitzy number, but it will forward the story. It will take it to the next level, or it will certainly be commenting on where you've got to in the narrative. Mm. So I think that's certainly one of the kind of major things which, as I say, I can't speak really knowledgeably about elsewhere, because I've been doing them every year, I've never had the chance to go elsewhere and see them. I don't even get a chance really to see them within Scotland so much. I made it up to His Majesty's in Aberdeen a couple of years ago after we'd finished Dick McWhittington, because they were also doing Dick McWhittington up there. And I was just kind of, and essentially the same script, but with differences, both written by Alan McHugh at that point, who is also the dame in His Majesty's in Aberdeen.
Okay.
But I've known Alan forever from Glasgow. So I was just really interested to see what the same thrusts of story were and where the differences lay. Mm-hmm. And there was a few. And I sat and thought, oh, I can't believe he kept that for himself and didn't give us that one. But I think the main thing for Scottish pantomimes, and again, they're not all the same, but it's about, you know, telling the story, and within that, you know, and I think more recently, bringing in some contemporary ideas, issues, agendas, whatever, you know, which leads me to Sinbad, I suppose, this year, where we did, obviously, I decided I was going to write a panto essentially about the beavers that live on the River Tay. And but through that, kind of tell the story of nature conservation, about nature itself, about and through that also about reusing, recycling, repurposing, and that sort of issue, and without hopefully banging, you know, the audience over the head with it, but just using it as a fairly useful storytelling tool, and try to do it in a sort of fairly light and hopefully comedic and entertaining fashion. He crossed his fingers.
I think you accomplished that.
Well,
as you do every year. There is something that we always have at Horse Cross's panto shows. It's near the end. There is the bringing down, or bringing dune of the clute.
Bring dune the clute, yes, that's right.
Can you elaborate for, say, any viewers that are not Scottish, don't live in Scotland, and need to understand what this is?
Well, the clute is an old Scottish word for a cloth, as in clutty dumpling, a dumpling that's made in a cloth.
A dessert.
But yeah, the cloth is what the lyrics of the song sheet song are written on, and it's just all. And this is not just a Perth thing. This is a Scottish panto tradition. It's been the same at the Glasgow Kings, and I would imagine probably the Edinburgh Kings and wherever else. At the appropriate moment when you get the audience to sing along with you, and they don't, and you ask them why, and they say, because we don't know the words. And we say, well, it's just as well we wrote them out on a great big clute. And then we get everyone to say, bring down the clute, bring down the cloth. And it comes, and it is. It's just an old panto tradition. I think they'll have the same tradition down south and in Wales and Northern Ireland as well, but they won't call it the clute. Or maybe I don't know. I don't know what a Northern Irish cloth is or a Welsh cloth is. But but yeah, it's that. And interestingly, well, I think it's interesting, in the 3 years that we were over at the concert hall, we couldn't fly. There wasn't flies like we have in this theatre here. So you can't bring anything in or bring it down. Mm-hmm. So we had to be slightly more inventive. So we would say, project the text. And we had a projector that shone onto a screen. And we brought the words up that way, which is just, you know, doing the same thing, but because of the limitations, if you like, of the building, we couldn't actually fly anything from above to below. But that's basically the clue, yeah. And it's great. It's a lovely coming together of an audience and me and, as it stands, young Ewan Summers up there. Just when we couldn't get any hotter and any sweatier, we decided to do an elaborate and jiggly dance. Yeah, it's great.
Thinking about you as not just an actor who plays our beloved panto dame, but you as a writer and as a director, at least 2 years now.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, fingers crossed,
we'll
continue that.
I'm certainly signed up to do it again. For 2020.
Wonderful.
And I can tell you it's going to be Cinderella. I can't tell you any more than that because I don't know any more than that. I haven't quite come up with the concept yet, other than hopefully it will be a Cinderella for the 2020s. We don't need Prince Charming coming in and saving the day. Women can do it themselves and do it rather well.
We'll put a pin in that. What are, as a writer, as a director of panto, what are some of the more important elements that you feel need to be part of every performance?
I am a traditionalist, and the panto that we do here is really very traditional. Even, you know, with bringing new ideas, new concepts in, I still get down to the nuts and bolts of it. It's still a traditional family pantomime, and long may that continue. So there are certain rules and regs, like the baddie will always come on from stage left. Not exclusively throughout, perhaps, but certainly in all the front cloth stuff that the baddie will do, he or she will traditionally enter from stage left, going back to the old left and right, sinister and Dexter, the sinister left. And there's all these kind of things, and I absolutely want to stick with that. So that's one thing. I think lovely big production numbers is something that you always want. Just basically a kind of, these, you know, they are, the stories are as old as time themselves. They're all just stories of good winning over evil, or very nasty, if not evil. And that's kind of basically, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I think that's kind of what it is. But within the context of that, like this year, I loved our design, but it was quite out there. It was quite... and when I saw it without any lights on it, I kept thinking, it just looks like wood. But I knew that. And then as soon as Kate Bonney worked her magic with the lights, I went, oh, it looks amazing.
It did.
And it did. Just nice, big, kind of tasteful, but potentially a bit brash in your face designs, most of which actually are costume wise, and most of them actually, that's the dame's job in a lot of respects, is to have the comedy outfit on. Not exclusively the dame, but, you know, I think you can tell the story of the dame very much in costume. Like in the opening of this year, she is Jackie Alltrade. She does many jobs, so she comes on with a patchwork quilt of a dress, basically, which has just been put together, obviously, by, you know, whatever she's got. She's got her tool belt on there. She's got everything she needs around there because she does, you know, she does everything. So, and, you know, the wig's got measuring tape sticking out of it and a paintbrush, and I love all that attention to detail. And, you know, to be honest, when I'm halfway up the stage, it's probably most of the audience can't quite make out that detail, but we know it's there. Yeah, so that's kind of one of the things, and I kind of, you know, I have an ongoing conversation with the designer about elements of that all the way through as well. So, which is great. I love that, being kind of involved in the discussion about how it's going to look as well as how it's going to sound and what's the story going to be.
Well, you are the director.
Allegedly.
Well, actually, speaking about costumes, we've had the opportunity for anyone who's come to Perth Theatre, to Horse Cross Theatre, that in our Threshold Art Space here in Perth Theatre, we've been exhibiting some pantomime costumes named for you, called Dames. It's been a free exhibition.
It's lovely. It's
in the foyer, and demonstrating pantomime costumes, set designs, stage photography. And we also did have some of your more recent, I believe, 2018, last year,
That's
or
right.
the year before.
It was last year's the walk-down costume, which was a Christmas tree, essentially.
Yes.
That's right.
However, over the years that I've been going to Panto, it seems that the costumes, particularly the dame's dresses, have become almost not just fantastical. They used to be quite a farce, but now I have to say, some of them, I've been looking at the designs, it's bordering on couture.
Absolutely.
Something that you would really consider wearing, maybe without the crazy headgear or the
or
wig.
Or maybe with that as well, you know, who's to say? But
True enough.
But yeah, and I mean, Becky Minto, who's designed the last 2 years, I've worked with Becky for over 20 years as an actor, you know, and I she's just phenomenal. She's got an amazing eye, and she's getting great. You know, I think I love her taste as well. And she can marry those two things. It can be ridiculous and fantastical and comedic, but also look kind of amazing and beautiful as well.
Oh, it does. It absolutely does.
And like, I think that in the even like that opening costume I was talking about earlier, you know, the fact that it's got all these what do you call them, underskirty bits. Can't even think of the word now. But anyway, the fact that it kind of sat out beautifully, like a kind of, you know, nipped in at the waist and kind of sat out like a 1950s kind of dress, you know, that kind of real full bodiness. And it's an amazing shape. I'm not talking about myself. I'm talking about the costume around
me. You look great in it.
But, you know, and it's not just about, certainly as far as Becky's concerned and as far as I'm concerned, it's not just about the dame, for example, looking ridiculous and funny. I think there's got to be a style to it as well.
Absolutely.
And Becky absolutely brings that to the table. She's amazing. And the people who realise it upstairs in the wardrobe department cannot be underestimated either. They're phenomenal. They work round the clock leading up to Panto. They're a crack team. They really are. They're absolutely on it all the time. And deliver, you know, all these incredible things. You know, probably the young company probably don't feel quite so good because the last 2 years we've put them into unbelievably warm, furry items of clothing, as there were beavers this year and there were moles last year. So I think I'll endeavour not to write any woodland creatures into the show this year, just to save our poor young company from sweating away into a little blob.
They might need to lose some weight.
Well, you know, I'm that's a conversation for another time. Let's see who we get first.
That's true. So, again, as a director and as a writer, how does the physical space of the stage, of the theatre itself, play a role in Panto?
It's crucial, absolutely crucial. And like this beautiful old Victorian stroke Edwardian, I think this is right on the cusp, isn't it? I think this was about 1900, 1901 or something like that. Beautiful old auditorium being brought right back to its former glories now. It's very much part of the feel of it. And also we do use the auditorium, you know, we do the baddie, had at least one entrance in through the auditorium this year, and then obviously we have an audience chase round as well.
Is that a tradition to come into the audience?
Well, I think
that?
A chase round certainly. I have been in other pantos in other buildings over the years, and that has happened. So yeah, and certainly I can't remember if we've had one every year now offhand, but we've certainly had one since we came back into the building. So that'll be 3 years. I'm pretty sure we had one with Aladdin. We certainly had one last year and this one this year.
It's very interactive. There is something about almost being part of the show when we see the characters come off the stage and are running through the aisles and even engage with us, asking,
Have you seen Justin Bieber? Or whatever. Yeah, and I think it is great. And what I loved, I did it last year and this year, is I come down off the stage and I go through the door downstairs, and a lot of the audience up here won't see me doing that, so they've no idea. And then all of a sudden I come...
You emerge.
...exploding through this door on the audience left side of the dress circle, and all of a sudden they're in the action too. And likewise, I had Ruben, the male ensemble member, up in the gods for all the...
Oh, wow.
Even in the shows that we didn't have an audience up there, Ruben came up here because he could run around there. I say there, obviously this is audio, but I'm pointing up to the upper circle, and he could come down and he could still have a relationship with the audience here in the dress circle, which is great, because he does, all of a sudden the whole room is at play. And even if it's only for 2 minutes, it's about including everyone. It's mm-hmm. like, you know, again, it's like throwing out the sweets, which is, you know, is a traditional thing, although health and safety has prohibited it in certain venues, but I wouldn't have any truck with that. But I just throw soft marshmallows or flumps.
You're a maverick.
But, you know, and I do endeavour and succeed in getting them up into the upper house, which is a bit fun, but it's also quite good because, you know, if an audience member comes out of the building saying, I was up in the gods and there was a sweetie chuck out and I got a sweet, I think that's a great thing. That's how you can use the whole room, the stage and the auditorium, as part of your play park, if you like.
So let's bring it back down to how you started as just the actor. Could you tell us what are some of the advantages and disadvantages of panto as an actor?
The disadvantages first, I would say, is that, you know, that time of the year, the Christmas festive sort of thing is, you know, you have, there's many things that friends and family are all involved in, and you just can't be part of that because you're on stage doing two shows a day, and you're, you know, you've got one day off a week, and then when you lead up to Christmas, your one day off that week will be Christmas Day, and then you're back in doing two shows on Boxing Day. So even Christmas Day, you're kind of keeping one eye on the clock and you know, thinking about getting back to do the show. That's what you sign up to, and that's fine. Likewise, you know, New Year's much the same. And New Year, in some respects, in Scotland's a bigger holiday than Christmas, or historically has been. And we did actually have New Year's Day off this year, which has not always been the case, and it was great. But the advantages are, you know, you come to work, and it is work, and it's hard work, but it's an amazing feeling to be part of something that you have hundreds of people in an auditorium clapping and cheering and joining in and singing along with you and getting up out of their seat and doing a silly dance. And there's an absolute joy in that. And the other, you know, I think the crucial thing about pantomime is, and this goes back to doing my first Christmas show at the Citizens Theatre, Giles Havergal, who was then one of the three artistic directors of the building, and he directed most of the Christmas shows there at that time. And I just always remember Giles saying, you know, this is one of the most, if not the most important shows you will ever do, because this is your kind of entry level for audience members. This will be the first time so many young people will ever set foot inside a theatre. Mm-hmm. And your kind of responsibility is to ensure that it's the most amazing time they can have, and by doing that, you have a repeat audience. These people will come back again, and that's, you know, you've got an audience for life at that point.
Or inspire them or to inspire go into the arts.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
It seems that's what happened with you, since that was your first foray
absolutely,
into the
theatre. I think it's most people, you know, it'll be most people of a generation, you know, well, not just of a generation, like going back generations. The first time many people will have ever set foot in front of inside a theatre would be to go and see a pantomime or a equivalent, you know, a Christmas show or whatever. And I think you can't underestimate that, because a lot of these buildings would not exist without pantomime. I know it's the one show in the year that they're as good as guaranteeing an audience, which certainly obviously helps to bankroll other work as well, although, you know, there's obviously funding bodies and all these other things, but it will be potentially in a lot of theatres. I'm not speaking about, you know, specifics here, but it will probably be the one show in any theatre's year that will actually make money, because the rest of them tend to not.
Well, you're bringing in the whole family, so that's multiple seats being filled.
And a lot of repeat business within the year. You know, I was checking, you know, the front of house reports after every day's work, and there was a lot of responses of people saying this is the second or the third time we've come back to see it this year, you know, which is brilliant. It's testament to the great work everyone was doing, but also the fact that people, and maybe, you know, they'll bring back maybe not the same people they were with, they'll bring other people along. So that's a fantastic, I can't even think of the word, testament to what pantomime is, that it brings people to the theatre, and in many cases it brings people back to the theatre within the run of the one show. I mean, I can't remember. The only time I remember going to see any show more than once, it not being a pantomime, was the tour of Blood Brothers in 1987, I think it was, which came to the Glasgow Kings, and it played for 2 weeks, and I was blown away by it, and I went back and saw it twice. After that, so I saw it 3 times in 2 weeks, and I've never done that with any other show in my life. But if people are coming to Perth Panto and then coming back the next week or in a couple of weeks' time, I think that's an extraordinary thing. Long may it continue.
May I ask you one last question?
Of course you may.
Panto, performing in panto, writing panto, seems to be a tightrope of how much entertainment can you provide for audiences that have adults as well as children, so you can't go too bawdy, but you can't make it so sterile that it bores people.
Yeah.
However, there have been a number of changes in the genre. There seems to be, at least in Perth, less or rather more cultural sensitivity to some of the more traditional storylines. So there's less stereotypes.
Yeah.
Of other ethnic groups or cultural groups. Could you tell me what are some of the other changes that you've seen happening, at least in Perth, including some of the more political changes that you've been bringing in?
Yeah.
That, you know, do you think they're necessary? What are these changes about?
I think they are absolutely necessary. In Perth, I've noticed, even before I had any kind of decision-making position, that trying to kind of readdress the gender balance, for example, in casts, which I absolutely have done this year past, and looking towards, I want to say next year, but it's actually this year, it's the end of this year, I want to have 50-50 male-female split again, which proves quite tricky, actually, in some respects, with Cinderella, because two of those female roles are played by male actors.
I haven't
absolutely 100% decided on exactly which characters I'm going to have, but I know I will have a 50-50 male-female split on that, which I think is only right and proper.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's been a long time coming, and I can't remember if we had it 2 years ago, but we certainly had it for this one just past Sinbad, and we'll definitely have it for Cinderella. So that's one of the things. I think we've been, and it's a conversation that Lou Kemp, the artistic director of Perth Theatre, and I have had about recognising the need to kind of reflect who we have on a day-to-day basis as an audience around the place. So, you know, addressing that in terms of ethnicity as well, people of colour being involved in the show and indeed in the young company and across the board. These are things that we're certainly moving more towards. I think we've probably still got a journey to go on. But without that becoming tokenism as well, I think it's kind of really important that you just have people are there because of their talent and their skills, but we do also need to be inclusive in our thinking about all of these areas, and likewise in the storytelling, the likes of Cinderella, for example. You know, I don't think it should take a kind of handsome young man to come in and say, "Don't worry about it, ladies. I'm going to sort this out." I think, we can have that, within it. And I think we probably will have that. But we'll have the ladies going, no, you're fine, thanks. We've actually already done that. But, thanks very much anyway for offering your mansplaining stroke, whatever else you were about to do. So just kind of dealing with those, those ideas, I think, is a very positive step. And as I touched on earlier on, the likes of what we did with Sinbad, we also tried, on stage, part of the story was all about reuse, recycle, repurpose. But we also did that within the actual, the fabric of the show. The actual production, the false cross frames that we had have served us well. They were brought from last year's show to this year's show. They were resurfaced, they were recovered, but they were the same, the same structures basically, which is a great thing because there's so much waste. Yes. In theatre. You look at the stage door of after a show like Panto comes out, and it's just skips full of stuff that's getting thrown away. It's perfectly good timber. So, and actually, I'm looking at this empty stage right now, and and I'm hoping that this is the case. Certainly, we have already had conversations about again using those same structures again for next year, and not that you would recognise them because they will all look wonderful and different. But as much as we can, I think we have to do that because, apart from anything else, theatres are not rich, and if they can reuse something and not have to buy it or have a huge amount of labour-intensive work spent on it, then all to the good, and that money can be better served, in other ways. Likewise, costumes, like we did, we sort of repurposed our moles of last year into our beavers of this year, for want of a better expression. And I think that's great to be able to do that within the kind of confines of health and safety. Again, you don't want the most horrible, dirty, grubby clothes to be brought back. They'll probably not reappear again. they're probably off on holiday. They've probably got their own lives. But I think these are the kind of things that I'm certainly keen to kind of, and I know that Lou and Perth Theatre itself are keen to follow through on as well, just in terms of trying to get it right, and trying to be inclusive and trying to, make sure it's a fair and level playing field for all, regardless of age, gender, racial background, whatever. Come and join the party if you're good enough.
Barry Hunter, actor, director, and most definitely our beloved Panto Dame for Horse Cross Theatre. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Let the record show I'm blushing.